let me mention what's supposed to happen in the Shiva house. Because, unfortunately, the way Shiva houses are structured is that it is very often the case that you walk into a Shiva house, it looks like a cocktail party. You know, hey, you hear what happened in the market today, let me tell you a great joke, there's all kinds of stuff going on, the relatives, we haven't seen each other for years, here, let's trade pictures of the grandchildren, you know, there's all, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on, there's all kinds of conversations and all the rest of it. You know what you're supposed to do in a Shiva house? You walk into a Shiva house, you sit down next to the mourner, and you keep your mouth shut. That's what you're supposed to do in a Shiva house. And you stay there until the mourner says something, and then you respond to what the mourner says. And then you shut up. The mourner says something else, and you respond to it, or else he doesn't. And then sooner or later, it's time to get up, and you get up, and you say, Hamakom yinachem abcha b'toch shadav leitzion Jerusalayim, may God comfort you among all the mourners for Zion and Jerusalem. And you leave. That's what's supposed to happen in a Shiva house. And I remember how utterly shocked Ruth Ann was, because she grew up in an Orthodox community. And I was at her parents' house when her mother was sitting Shiva for her mother, for Ruth Ann's grandmother. And what I'm describing now is exactly what happened. Everybody sat there in silence. People came in. You know, every now and then my mother-in-law would say something. People would respond to her. And then and after that, they would leave. You can basically hear a pin drop. And then Ruth Ann would see Shiva houses that she'd never experienced it before. And she just couldn't believe what was happening. Because people just are so out of touch with what is supposed to be happening that they don't get it. And because they don't get it, the mourners don't have that comforting experience of being catered to, of people listening to them while they're trying to get out what it is that they say. The only thing you're supposed to talk about in the Shiva house is the deceased.
They're playing host.
The comment was, they're playing host, which is exactly what they're not supposed to be doing. You know, that's why to me it is a major mitzvah, and I always try and make a point of doing it, of going back to a Shiva house and preparing the first meal for the deceased. I mean, to me it is a big mitzvah that I intentionally go and I put together personally the plates for the mourners and offer them the food. I sort of elbow everybody else out of the way because I want that mitzvah. They are not there to make you feel comfortable. We are there to try to make them feel comfortable, which of course we can't, but to do nichum avimim, the consolation of mourners. So, as I said, when you come into the Shiva house, your job is to respond to the mourner. What you definitely do not say is, I know how you feel. You don't know how they feel. You have a vague idea. You know they feel miserable. But the intricacy of each person's individual mourning experience in their relationship to the deceased, none of us can have any clue about. When you say, I know how you feel, what the mourner immediately says, no, you have no clue how I feel. There are no words to express. There are not enough tears to be cried to express the way I feel. So don't tell me that. I had a great teacher, Rabbi William Horn from Summit, and he gave me the most valuable piece of information that I ever got about practical rabbinics. He said, if you go into a Shiva house thinking that you're going to accomplish something, you never will. You go there, you be there, that's all you can do. Nobody wants your theology. Nobody wants your great wisdom. This death and the experience of it is far beyond what any of us can grapple with. So you go there and you listen hard. And then, when it's time to leave, you do something interesting. When it's time to leave, then you say, Hamakom yinachem otcha. All of a sudden, you've got a set line, a ritualized response. So what's going on there? Well, I can't know what it's like for you who lost your mother. So in that sense, there was a gap between us that I can't bridge. But there is a mourning experience where you and I are in exactly the same boat, and I do know exactly what you experience. We are all mourners for Zion. Okay, we have all lost our temple. So right now, you know, you've cut your clothes, you've done career, you've torn the ribbon for an individual, and I can't get into that relationship. I can't grasp that fully. So I don't know how you feel. But in the other one, I do know how you feel because I'm there too. We're in this one together. So I'm going to leave now, and I'm going to leave by saying this line that on the one hand links us together intimately, and on the other hand puts your experience of mourning into the broader context of the experience of our people who have also been in mourning. There were, you should know, for 1,000 years after the destruction of the temple, there were people who lived their lives wearing black. Avalei Tzion, who mourners for Zion, who restricted the kind of food that they would eat, restricted the kind of rituals that they would have. For over 1,000 years after the destruction of the temple, there were people who were still actively mourning the temple. So to say then, as we're about to leave, HaMakom Yenachem Otcha, you know, we are now in this same fraternity. And so now I can assert something to you, something that I couldn't do before. What the mourner is trying to do in this 7-day period is to go from death to life, to go from alienation to reintegration. That's what this 7-day period is about.